It was nearly 9 years ago now, in March of 2015, that a deadly shooting during a drug robbery gone wrong would not only make headlines in Miami, where it happened, but here at home and around the world. Just weeks after she'd arrived in South Florida to take on the role as Canada's Consul General with her 17-year-old son, Jean, and 15-year-old son, Mark, Roxanne Dubé found herself at the center of a robbery and murder story. In a matter of moments, her eldest son, Jean, was dead, and her youngest son was in police custody.
And we have breaking news right off the top tonight. And one of the sons of the Canadian Consul General in Miami is dead. Another son is facing a murder charge tonight in connection with a shooting in Miami. Miami Police Chief Rudy Giannis telling CBS 4 News that 15-year-old Mark Wabafiabazu and his 17-year-old brother Jean tried to rob some drug dealers yesterday. And during the robbery, which took place inside a home in Miami, there was gunfire. Jean was shot and killed.
Now, one of the suspected drug dealers was also killed. Police confirmed the teens were in their mom's car, which had diplomatic plates. Under Florida law, anyone who participates in a violent felony in which someone dies can themselves face a murder charge. No comment from the Canadian Consul General in Miami, Roxanne Dubé. We will bring you the latest developments as they become available.
Now, this all unfolded 9 years ago now, back in March of 2015, and it made international headlines for obvious reasons. Here was a person who was representing the Canadian government and her sons, 17 and 15 at the time, take off in her car with diplomatic plates, ostensibly for the older son to commit a robbery. Now, what the younger son knew, of course, at the time has always been something that has been disputed. Whether he could have even stopped it has often been talked about. A little bit of background. Dubé had been sort of climbed her way through the ranks of the Foreign Service. She was not from a family that would necessarily introduce you to those ranks. She grew up in a rural part of Quebec. She became ambassador to Zimbabwe. She was divorced from the boy's father, Germano Wabafiabazu, originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo, who she had met while studying in Ottawa. And she had been based in Ottawa for a while. Her eldest son, Jean, had some run-ins with the police. So it was figured that a move to Miami, this incredible opportunity to be consul general there, seemed like the perfect chance for a reset. Instead, at that point, Jean was dead. He had shot and killed an intended victim. Mark was in police custody, facing the possibility of spending decades behind bars. All of that in a bid to steal what was, police estimated, $4,800 worth of marijuana from a young drug dealer named Joshua Wright. Although he wasn't involved in the shooting, just to make this clear, Mark was charged with felony first-degree murder and a handful of other offenses. Florida authorities said the teen knew of his brother's robbery plan and was culpable in the ensuing crimes, and he faced 40 or more years in prison. That did not happen. It turned out, and we'll hear this from his mom, he managed to find a way to convince a judge and a courtroom that he was going to be able to be rehabilitated. And he has been. Nearly 9 years later, mother and son, her surviving son, are back in Ottawa and, by all intents and purposes, considering what happened 9 years ago, back on track. Understandably, it has been a very difficult stretch for all involved. But Dubé has decided to put her story down in a book, a way of not only coming to terms with the horrific events of that day, but also asking herself that very tough question about what more she could have done to prevent all of this from happening. What more she could have done as a parent to understand her child, her sons, who are, of course, both young and Black and growing up in Canada and then in the U.S. at the time. This is a real soul searcher for her. And she also hopes to offer parents of teens some lessons as well about parenting and responsibility and what it's like when everything absolutely falls apart for you. In a positive note, the book is called Understanding at Last, and former Canadian diplomat and now author Roxanne Dubé joins me now from Ottawa. Thank you for your time tonight.
So happy for you to have me.
This is a really, I gather just from having looked through it, I mean, this was not an easy book to write, but it's something that you felt like you had to do. Why was that?
You're absolutely right. It's not what I anticipated to write. I kind of knew I wanted to write, and I thought it was going to be easier in the sense of not involving my role as much as I discovered it had to be. But once I walked through it, it became very clear to me that the principal reason why I wanted to carry this through was to be clearer on my responsibilities vis-à-vis my children's responsibilities in the tragedy. Because as you remember, they were quite young. They were 18 and 15. And as I was doing this, I was so surprised by what I discovered in terms of my own disconnection with them as a parent, first and foremost. And then the fact that I had not seen them for all they were in their racial difference.
Right.
That as I was discovering that truth and what I consider to be a path to the connection with my son today, I felt, wow, I need to share this.
Right. Understanding at last, right? I mean, the title always says so much about a book.
Right. And another reason, Ben, was, and it's a true story, a couple of months after the tragedy, I went to these big bookstores in Miami, and I wanted to find the magic book that would help me as a parent with a child in crime. Well, there's nothing. And I know now why parents with a child in crime will not write about it, because it's very difficult and it has to end and perhaps start with your role as the parent. Because there's no way a child will simply get into crime. And this was my biggest discovery, that my son did not fall into crime because of poor social influences or just the teenage years or just circumstances outside of our control. He chose crime because he was not well to begin with. And he was not well in part because he was disconnected from the most important people in his life, including me.
Yeah. And you talk about this. I mean, you had this incredible career. I mean, you didn't grow up in a family that had huge ties to the diplomatic corps. You kind of blazed your own trail into what is a very coveted job. I know you worked for Lloyd Axworthy back in the day and found your way sort of in the Foreign Service. That's not an easy career to embark on. You must have been very driven and very focused on it as well. You need to devote a lot of time to a career like that.
And I was. And in part, that's what I kind of expected my children to follow, a path similar to me. But I was lucky. Yes, I worked really hard. I invested, and I had this curiosity and appetite for the world at a very young age. But I also recognize now, more so than then, that I was also propelled by forces as a white woman who was in the right circumstances and was able to do that. Whereas for my children, it was a different experience that they were going through.
Right. You meet and marry the father of your children while you're still in university. Again, someone from a completely different background, very different from your background. But in some ways, it also encapsulated, in some sense, your idea of wanting to see the world and just have kind of a different life than maybe the one you grew up in.
Yes. And I was in my 20s, and I thought I could embrace every situation. He was interesting as a person. He was very intelligent and still is. We're still in communication vis-a-vis our son, and I fell in love. And it's a very beautiful feeling. And as I embarked on my professional career, I was going from success to success. And then he was struggling a bit. And that created some tensions into our relationships. And then once we have the children, that's when you see the test of, do we come at it from a common parenting? And there were some tensions there that impacted our children. And I see it more clearly now. And I realize, as I revisited those years when I wanted to see more clearly, how there too, I did not see him for all that he was in terms of his racial difference.
Yeah.
And I ended up seeing my children like Oreo cookies, like black on the outside and white in the inside, because they were the sons of Roxane Dubay. They were going to be succeeding. And so according to the same path that I had taken, where I left my family young and I just went alone in Ottawa and I didn't know anybody. And I was lucky in a way to be able to forge my way forward, very much thinking that I can do it all. and not realizing that the circumstances of others around me may not be the same.
BS4 News.
The police showed up, surrounded the house, and you know, they dragged a young kid out. He was screaming something at his brother, you know, nasty words, and his brother, and the police tell him that he killed them.
Now at 6, one of the sons of a top diplomat in the Canadian government is dead, her second son arrested in a drug deal gone wrong. The 15-year-old son is charged with felony murder in the shooting that left his 17-year-old brother dead. The teens are the sons of the Canadian Consul General in Miami.
Roxane Dubé is a former Canadian diplomat. Her book is called Understanding at Last. Roxane, at this point, I mean, reading through you leaving Zimbabwe, heading back to Ottawa, and then getting this opportunity in Miami, and anyone who's been in Miami would always think, oh, Consul General, I think I even saw the office. Consul General Miami, that must be a good job. And you arrived there, you must have arrived there with hopes and expectations, and with your two boys who are now teenagers at this point, and 1-18, 1-15, and lots of hopes that maybe this will be a good place to be and that everything will find itself in this new spot on the beach, so to speak.
Yes, and I had, just before we left, and I explain it in the book, Jean, my oldest son, had some issues with drug trafficking. So I was hopeful that we were going to pull it out of there and put him in a really good school in the southern part of Miami in Pinecrest, and he was going to have a new start. And he wanted it too. And for me, of course, it was a great professional opportunity. And off we went. And the narrative I was telling me in my head at the time was, I'm a good mother. I'm doing this to help my son. It's going to put him on a better footing. He deserves this. I deserve this. And I cannot do any more than what I'm doing now. And I was putting it in a sense on his shoulder to say, okay, I'm the good mother here. I'm doing the best. And I was, I loved it so much, loved him so much. And I put him the responsibility on him now. Okay, so you go off and you do good here. You're in a perfect environment to do that, despite what people say about crime in Miami. Mm-hmm. There's a full body of the city that is very thriving and very full of opportunities. And that's where we were, not realizing that he needed help. He was lost. And therefore, 2 months later, tragedy hit.
2 months, it was that. I remember when it happened, because it was, again, I've always thought of what it must be like for you, because it was so public for you. I mean, oftentimes these situations for parents can be, I mean, you know, people understand that it's publicized, but in your case, it was so very public. Tell me about that night, because I know you've described it in your own way, what happened that evening, where you were and how you heard.
Well, I heard in, they left at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they said that they were going to go to a bookstore to buy a book, and then they were going to go to see a movie. And late at night, I got a call from our embassy in Washington saying, well, something has happened. There seems to have been gunshot. Your sons may be involved. And I rushed like a crazy woman to the main hospital in Miami. I made a fool of myself trying to find out about my son. And eventually somebody flipped me a little piece of paper and said, call this person, which was a detective. And he told me Jean was dead. And I went to the police station. It was by then like early in the morning. He informed me quite coldly that Mark was also charged with first degree murder. In the space of about an hour, my life was turned upside down. And that's when I tried to describe in the book, in as objective a way as possible, the journey of a 15-year-old through the judicial system, through the prison system, and then through the boot camp system. And the whole way that the system is structured, which is flawed. And it wasn't the main goal of me when I wrote, but now I feel there's also something there for Canadians. You know, we have 4 million Canadians going to Florida every year. When I recall the story, people can see, in a sense, the parameters, the nature, and more importantly, the limits of what your Canadian government can do for you when you get involved with justice. And how, on the flip side, the culture, the system in Florida in particular, but also in the rest of the United States, is very difficult to navigate through.
I mean, I don't even know where you begin to figure out what to do in that circumstance. I mean, having read through the book, I realized that what you did is that you realized, I can't imagine you had coped with any of the grief yet, but you realized there was a son to protect, that you'd lost one, but there was one that needed your help now.
Right. And that was, this is what propelled me to stay put and to carry and to go forward. Because I know now, Ben, when you have so much sadness, when you have so much guilt and regret, those are very powerful emotions that draw you down. And there were moments when I didn't tell my son, I didn't tell anyone, but I genuinely know what it is when it's so dark. You don't know if you're going to make it. But having to defend Mark, I think, was a big motivation. And luckily, and this is the beauty of our story, is you see a 15-year-old become a young man and realizing, like, yes, maybe I wanted to die when it happened. And that's what he told me when I saw him in prison. But then he goes to grieve. He asks himself questions. Why did my brother do this? What is it for me? What do I want with my life? And then move on and on and on and grows out of it. And then you also see the good of a defense system who can take on their plight, on their back, if you will, a young boy who they believed into. So there's a story of hope. And that's why we both wanted it out, to demonstrate that path.
It's the mother that is the happiest in the world, because I get to have my son back. And I would hide if I wouldn't say it's been difficult.
She will never, of course, get her older son back, shot dead while up to no good. The state and defense called the plea bargain for the younger brother a just result.
This gives him a chance to straighten out his life. And if he takes that chance, he will go forward. If he fails, he will be harshly punished.
This is a young man that does have significant redeeming qualities. Unfortunately, made a horrible decision to hang out with his older brother, who apparently was up to no good, we now know.
Roxane Dubé is a former Canadian diplomat. We're talking about her book tonight, Understanding at Last. It tells the very difficult story. And you may remember this story from 2015, in March of 2015. Roxane Dubé was recently appointed, or just had arrived in Miami to become Canada's consul general there after a long diplomatic career. With her were her two sons, Jean and Marc Wabafiabazu. She'd been married and divorced at this point. Her sons were in their teens. Jean was 18. Marc was 15. Jean had some trouble back in Ottawa with the law. A little bit, and Roxane figured that this move to Miami would be a new beginning for all of them. Within 2 months, for reasons I guess still unknown and perhaps never understandable, Jean was involved in a robbery that went wrong, and both he and the person that was being robbed were killed. Marc was in the car at the time that Jean had driven there, and he too was arrested by police. And at this point, of course, Roxane sees one son racked with guilt. They're trying to comprehend this incredible loss of the eldest, Jean. And then from there, Roxane, you tell this, I mean, I know for a fact that you basically invested every penny you had just trying to figure out how you couldn't get Marc back out of there and back onto a better path. And this took all your energy for a while, right? When you were trying to figure out how he could be spared what looked like might be a very long prison sentence. It would be essentially the end of life as you knew it.
Absolutely. And it was the end of life for two reasons. For me, it was almost, and I talked earlier about how I became a little bit emotional about how you really want to find a meaning in your life. And I could see how serious this was. He was charged with two murders and armed robbery. And every time we would go to court, the prosecutor, and eventually we found out that the judge was very much on her side, were reminding us that he was facing life in prison. And then we went through a system where police do lie. If it wasn't for a video, he would have been in prison today. That's my understanding of how serious this was. So for me, it was, how can I possibly help a boy, or teenager, let's say a teenager to your listener, to be fair to the fact that he knew that his brother wanted to go and steal marijuana. And I do say that in the book.
Yes.
But he was sitting in the passenger seat of the car. He didn't have a gun. He didn't have any means of communicating with his brother. He didn't take any action on the ground by way of any assault, any use of a gun, or anything that could possibly incriminate him. And yet he was charged those things as felony. And in the Floridian system, it's very serious because he was propelled into adult court like in no time.
Right.
And so he was facing very, very serious circumstances. So for that, of course, you throw everything possibly at it.
I can't, again, reading your story, I can't imagine what that combination of guilt, anger, despair, and responsibility must be like all mixed into one, because you did have this other boy, you did have Mark to worry about, and he had witnessed this. He lost his brother and must have been racked with guilt about what he could have done to stop it, if only he'd said something. And then there's your situation. And then you throw into all of that this idea of the disconnect of a white mom with her kids who are living in a different reality, and perhaps even a much more acute different reality in a place like Florida. It's a lot to understand. A lot of people would have worked out okay, and yet you faced all these incredible challenges to try to get through. Do you ever think that, I'm reading through the book, obviously one says, don't be so hard on yourself. You were a good mom, are a good mom.
Well, and I agree. The guilt and all of that really pushed me down and almost got me to stay there. I don't want to minimize it's a fear that really I've never experienced, when you really are not sure you're going to make it. But I think eventually what did go through, what made it happen for me, and it was deliberate, is once I figured out that there was something vis-a-vis my relationship with my own children that I had overlooked. Because as a parent, when things don't go well, we often think, well, why is he doing this? He must know this is hurting me. And I realized that I was angry at my oldest son, which I had not pinned down before we went to Miami. Then it made me feel, wait a minute here, Roxanne. You really need to figure out what is it that was your relationship with your children before you went down, not the reverse. And put aside the other factors. They are way worth to look at in terms of the undue influences of older young men who take teenagers on the right road. That's worth looking at. But for me, what got me out was, no, I'm going to focus on this, because if I do this right, if I find the truth there, I'm going to be able to say to that woman, and this is what I say to that woman now, that Roxanne, at the time, with what she knew, she did the best that she could. And the other piece that is also helping Ben is, of course, my son, and the fact that the connection with him now and what he's doing with his life. And this is what got me to the finish line with the book, because there were many moments where I felt, what are you doing here, Roxanne? Maybe, who do you think is going to be interested in this? But what got me to the finish line is this. There came a time where I said to myself, this did not happen to us. This happened for us. And if I put my arms down, and if I embrace it all and really take the time to figure out what I had to learn with this, that if I can make sense of it to the others, there may be some learnings there that could be helpful. Because as I said earlier, so few parents write about crime.
So few parents in your situation write about it, indeed. Because it's so tough to to admit, although, I mean, when we talk so much these days about sort of talking things out, one would assume someone in a situation such as yours, especially with a son, another son to worry about and to raise, and to, another son to help make sense of this too, that talking it out would be the most beneficial thing. But as you pointed out, there just isn't much out there for people in your situation. There is no guidebook, right, to what you were living through.
No. I have a drawer in my room, in my desk, and I call it the drawer of lamentations, because you should have seen the first versions of the chapters. The world was all wrong and I was all right. But that process of putting words on paper, it really works as a therapy, because you see the words on paper. And at some point you say to yourself, I cannot close that door by writing it this way. So you go and you search and you search and you search. Conversations with my son. And people sometimes say, hey, you're too hard on yourself in the book. Or why are you just so much focusing on your role as a parent? Mm-hmm. And my response is, because in when we talk about children in crime, in my view now, it would be my contention, is we don't talk enough about that part of it. Parents who have children who are isolating, who are mutilating themselves, who are in some form of delinquence, I cannot overstate how helpful to me it was to say to myself, stop thinking about how you feel in this and start thinking about how you relate and how perhaps your son feel. And because that's when I discovered how he could not connect with me, because I was angry. If you're angry, right, as a parent,
you were disappointed. You were disappointed, yeah, in him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he knew that. He knew that. And he knew that.
That's right. But there was no path for him to connect and for him to feel, okay, I need help. And for me to say, yes, I am there.
Roxane Dubé is a former Canadian diplomat. Her book is called Understanding at Last. Roxane, you've left Florida at this point. Mark has served what will be his time. He's been found guilty of something much less serious. He's done the boot camp thing, and then he's been allowed to come back to Canada. And this is sort of the new start for the two of you, but with the life very much changed. But he finds his way. He sort of ends up at Algonquin College, and you sort of, things feel like they're right again, don't they? And that must have been, I don't know what the emotion would have been like for you other than satisfying, I suppose.
Absolutely. And he first of all, before he left for Miami, there was the boot camp, which is a mm-hmm. 6 month, very sports driven activity. And if he was here, he would say this was beneficial to him. That was the one good thing he had. And the other comment I would make is the circumstances in which he came back to Canada are extraordinary. If you read the book, in terms of the various players and a misunderstanding between the Floridian and national authorities. But yeah, Now he's here. And the minute he gets here, within a day, he announces to me that he converted to Islam.
Interesting.
Imagine
another challenge for you, right? To try to understand these young men who are your boys.
Exactly. So you go to where most parents would go. Who did you talk to in prison? What were the influences? It must have been this. It must have been that. And it turned out to be, no, it was nobody in prison. It was a child who had looked at the Bible, who had looked at other things and said, what makes sense in my life? There has to be something deeper than what I have seen around me in jail. And so with that discipline in his life, because Islam brings a lot of discipline and a sense of good, may I dare say, and peace, that is also what I discovered in that community, he then charted a path towards helping others. In the last year and a half, he's really started to realize, no, what I really want to do is social work. So he's, as part of a Islamic organization, he's building programs in the community in Ottawa with young people and not so young people, but with the young people, it's about prevention of crime. And it's about coaching young men to be, young boy, to be better men, because he notices there are quite a number of young people out there that are not doing so well.
And you're a grandparent.
And I'm a grandparent. Yes, he got married, and I have a little girl, Jenna, and it's immensely fulfilling.
Someone once told me that when it comes to a biography like that, or an autobiography, there's no ending, right? Because it's life, so there is no way to end it perfectly. But you must have walked away from that experience of having written this all down with a thought about what it was that you'd gone through and where you are now. 9 years later, right?
Right. And as I was saying earlier, I think once I realize there's no kind of putting this aside and kind of continuing on a path, even in the career, as I had understood it, although I was told, and I know it was true, that they were more than happy to reappoint me as a head of mission elsewhere, I knew this was over for me, because this had impacted us so much. So it took me on a different trajectory around the issue of doing my part as a member of an increasingly pluralistic society where we have people of different culture, of different origin. And I was, as you heard, as you see in the book, I was granted the privilege to head the Training Institute of the Canadian Diplomats. Mm-hmm. It really caught me to think about what I could do better, A, with my own personal story, B, with my professional career, C, with the additional certification that I got to play my part in this. And this is what I do now.
And just as when people walk away from this book, because I think it's one of those stories that's difficult to read because of what happened, and it still resonates years later, even seeing the images of back then now, of course, your son Mark is on the cover of the book, and he looks so different now than he did as a boy, right, at 15. And it reminds you how much time has passed. But when people read this, what would you like them to walk away from this reading of and walk away thinking about that night and you and your family and all that happened since?
Well, I would like them to walk away with the cover of the book. The cover of the book is, we go through difficult circumstances in life. Nothing is more important than our close family. And even though we may have been profoundly disconnected, here on the book of the on the cover, you see a mother who is looking at her child, seeing him, hopefully now, in all that he is, in his differences, in his commonalities, is connected with that child. And he is looking at the future. And that is the message that Mark and I wanted to transmit here, is that there is always, not always, but there can be hope. And difficult circumstances that even tarnish your reputations. It's just a moment in life. You can do something with it and move on with it. And that's what we're trying to do. And are grateful for the opportunity to be able to tell our story.
Roxanne, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.